The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Morning and welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Today we are going to be doing our hot takes show, and joining me we have Charlie Smith out of Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. Charlie, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
I am doing great. Fans can find me at Smith_MLB. Really excited to get this next show underway.
Wonderful. Also joining us today is Terry Cushman out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Terry, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
I am splendid as always. I can be found at CushmanMLB. The podcast account, which is the busiest of them all, can be found at Bastards_Boston. And you can find the Facebook account at Terry Talks Sox.
I always got to give you credit for getting through that. I feel like I would trip over myself trying to talk about that Facebook page. But nevertheless, let's get into it. We've got a couple of takes that we want to discuss tonight. Thank you all for submitting your hot takes to the show. Charlie, why don't you lead us off? What is the first hot take that you would like to discuss?
Thank you so much. So the first hot take comes to us from the tag Hunter Sway 67. Tyler O'Neill will have a better year than Justin Turner. Justin Turner has an incredibly nice batting average, but Tyler O'Neill has almost the same number of home runs as Justin Turner has RBIs. Tyler O'Neill also leads the majors in OPS, and at one point earlier this year was leading in both sluggage and OPS. He's number two in slugging, and then on base percentage, he has dropped a little bit, but he is still just outside the top 10. He's in 11th, and I think it's a spot that he can find himself in again. He's definitely had the plate appearances. There are a couple names above him that have not had the same number. So while you're seeing Justin Turner have a .380 batting average, that's great. Tyler O'Neill is not slowing down and has a swing tailor-made for Fenway Park. So I absolutely believe this is the – not only accurate, this is just proven so far through 2 weeks of baseball. This is not really a hot take, given the fact that 2 weeks have gone by and we've just seen this guy almost single-handedly lead some games. Like, he's been fantastic. He's gone 4-for-10 in multiple series. The guy just gets it. He has a great swing. I'm so happy the Boston Red Sox were willing to give a guy like Tyler O'Neill a chance, because he's a game changer. I think Tyler O'Neill could finish the year at this pace with over 30 home runs. I would not be surprised if he's even sniffing 40. That's how good this guy can be. And wouldn't surprise me if he has 10 or more home runs before the month of April. Hopefully he can get 15 RBIs, because if people aren't on base, he can't knock them in. That's my bit on Hunter Sway's take. Terry, anything you want to add to that?
So thanks for the hot take, Steve. Charlie seems to think you're a very impressive young man. But I think Justin Turner will have Charlie's just losing it. We're on fire tonight. But Justin Turner, I think, is going to have the better year. He's the healthier guy. I think he's just the better hitter at the plate. If by some miracle Tyler O'Neill plays 140 games, he'll have hit more home runs for sure than Justin Turner. But he's already got, in a small sample size, albeit, over double the number of strikeouts that Turner has. As far as doubles go, wow, Tyler O'Neill has not hit a single double. 0 for in that category. That's kind of a, it's an important category. Turner's hit six, which is really impressive. I mean, that's on pace for like 40 something. And Charlie's got balloons going up on his thing.
I don't know why. You do thumbs up. You do like peace sign and you get balloons in the background. It's really weird. I don't know. It's bizarre. Anywho, Justin Turner has seven doubles and one home run, and he's hitting over 380. So he's been great. I have to say that this month alone, I don't think anyone's going to be able to hold a candle to Tyler O'Neill. You're very adamant that Tyler O'Neill is going to go down. I'm going to ride the high and say that Tyler can stay healthy for the whole year and then is able to turn that into a crazy contract for himself.
We're going to find out he's Chris Sale's second cousin, and then it's all going to make sense. But I don't know. I just think Turner, the guy I like to refer to as the redheaded stepfather, because, you know, he's twice the age of his teammates. I just like him. He's just a better hitter. I think at the end of the year, I don't know if he'll have a better war of being a DH, but I like him, and he's got more guys to drive in. He's kind of wedged into a better lineup, a better balanced lineup. And foolishly, he's a big reason why I picked them to win the division. But after watching that Baltimore series, I owe them an apology. But Cody, what are your thoughts?
Man, it's like sitting here being like the mediator of a debate, right? We've got Justin Turner and Terry's corner. It's his guy. And then we have Tyler O'Neill and Charlie's corner. That's his guy. It's tough to pick here, right? You know, I think Justin Turner is a more polished hitter. I don't think we can disagree with that. I think the production that we got out of him last year in the Red Sox uniform was unpredicted. And, you know, to be frank, unprecedented. The dude's 38 going on 40, and he's still producing at a high level. But this game is a war of attrition, right? You know, is age or injury going to catch up to you? And at this point in time, I have to side with the younger individual. You know, albeit the younger individual has gotten injured more frequently than, you know, the older individual, but 98 looks like 98 looks like 106 the older you get. And I, you know, Fenway seems to suit Tyler O'Neill very well. The Blue Jays tend to not necessarily kind of keep it all together. They tend to underperform, unfortunately, as exciting as they are. So I got to go with Tyler O'Neill here.
I don't know why we're friends, but the one thing I want to point out is Justin Turner is almost 40. Like, Tyler O'Neill is going to be in a nursing home by the time he's 40, based on his career history.
What do you mean? Tyler O'Neill is playing out of his mind right now. It's like you're not watching the games, Terrence.
He's hitting home runs, and that's it.
Actually, that is a good point, though. We have to qualify how we want to check back in on this, right? Because they produce in very different ways.
That's
right?
What I'm
O'Neill's
saying.
It's not going to be an average or an RBI guy, but Turner's probably not going to get the long balls or, you know, obviously the defensive runs. So are we just going to go overall war? What is the metric that we're going to use to determine who's having a better season?
Offensive war. Full season. Justin Turner may not be able to stay healthy at 39. Think about if he gets injured. He's 10 years older than Tyler O'Neill. How much longer is it going to take him to heal if he hurts his foot again? I mean, and why are we celebrating someone who's not playing for our team anymore? I love Justin Turner, but dude, let's celebrate the guy that's on our team. The guy who's actually doing damage is leading to almost two statistical categories halfway through the month of April that we didn't think was going to be possible. He was the first one of six, first one of seven. If I'm not mistaken, I said there's a chance that Tyler O'Neill could have been the first guy to hit 10 home runs in the majors this year. I'm pretty sure I said that, maybe not last show, but the show before that. Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't remember what I said. But, dude, if Tyler O'Neill hits 30 home runs and 98 RBIs or 100 RBIs, and Justin Turner hits 16 homers and 90 RBIs, and it's 304, and Tyler O'Neill hits 260 or 270, who had the better year? 270, 3100, or 280, 1890?
But Turner's going to have way more doubles, and O'Neill's going to have way more strikeouts. I like looking at the whole picture.
Let's have this one. 4-14-24. Let's see who has the better year at the end. Cody, go.
Offensive
no,
war, though.
This is going to be great.
Offensive war has to be the category.
I was just going to say, are we all in agreement that it's going to be offensive war is the metric that we're going? This is a great hot take, by the way.
It has to
Thank
be.
You, Steve, for bringing this up. So we're going to go offensive war, year end. We'll check back in on this. Yeah? We
Done.
Agree, both parties?
It'll be over by July, but that's fine.
All righty. The ever optimist, Terry. Terry, what is your hot take for tonight?
Mine, just getting the name of the person, comes from Bill Leach, who apparently might be a neighbor of Charlie, or ex-neighbor, I should say, now that Charlie's moved. But he comes from Warwick, Rhode Island, according to his profile picture. And I would take this as a compliment, but he does look like one of the guys on Impractical Jokers, if you've seen the show. But anyway, I hope Bill's good with that. Just wait 5 minutes and I'll make fun of myself. But anyway, his hot take is that Alex Cora gets fired mid-season and is replaced by Jason Veritek. Now, on the previous episode last week, Clown Takes, to be specific, I kind of go into that quite a bit. And I wouldn't be shocked if things do go sideways, and I think they will, that's not going to shock me, but if things go sideways, perhaps Alex Cora and the Red Sox just kind of mutually part ways in June or July. If the team's just not looking good, there's clearly not going to be any reinforcements coming. We're not going to be buyers at the deadline. We'll be sellers, if anything. I could see if Alex Cora wants to test the free agent market, I could see them kind of just mutually agreeing to part ways. And at this point, that could pave the way for Jason Veritek. Now, normally when the manager gets fired, the new manager ends up being an internal candidate and is usually the interim manager, but it's usually someone internally. So you have Jason Veritek, who last I knew was the game planning coordinator. And then you could have Ramon Vasquez, who's the bench coach. I think those are the two logical ones. Now, the thing I always caution is general managers are usually hesitant to hire somebody that's going to be more popular than them. And who's more popular than Jason Veritek? I mean, maybe David Ortiz and a couple other people, but Veritek is a Greek god in Boston. So I just don't know that that's what'll happen, but they could look at it as like an audition for Jason Veritek just to see how things look the last few months, see what the vibe is. Are they perhaps maybe a little bit better defensively? Like, what's Tech doing to help improve things? So it's a good hot take, and I think there's at least a 50% chance Alex Cora will not be here on August 1st.
Charlie?
Red Sox currently are 9-7. They are facing teams that are losing players to injuries pretty quickly. I think the Red Sox can stay above that, and the Red Sox can remain a relevant team, not only in the AL East, but in Major League Baseball. I don't think Cora is going to go anywhere. I mean, you and I, Terry, we talked about multiple times about how, you know, Cora got suspended for an entire year. Done. You're not managing. And then we brought him back. You and I were two that actually said, if he doesn't come back, we're okay with it. We're okay giving a chance to somebody else. So Cora knows full well he was blackballed for a year, suspended. You're not getting another chance. And some people have not been able to recover. Cora has been able to recover by getting a job back in Boston after, you know, 1 year suspension. And he's got the Boston Red Sox to thank for that. But ultimately, if he ends up going, is that great for him? Yeah, because he'll end up becoming the next manager of, you know, the next maybe Dodgers or another team that's really, really great. I don't think he'll go to New York, but I think there's a chance that he could go become the next manager of another team. And he'll forever be, you know, supported, cheered, and everything whenever he comes out. And that's going to be the thing. So the Boston Red Sox were already in a little bit of a crap storm, really can't afford to continue going in that direction, you know, with the passing of Larry Lucchino and the display of kind of, or lack of support that he received from Tom Werner and John Henry and a couple of other Sox brass, like, great, awesome. You know, your wife was in attendance, but that's not the same as having you there. So I think that mixed with a couple other areas where we're trying to sell fans on the Fenway experience and all that business. I think if you fire Alex Cora, you're going to alienate an even larger portion of the team. And maybe Jason Veritek could be a better fit, but if the Red Sox continue winning or continue maintaining to be relevant with the team that they currently have and the players that they've lost for the season, I don't think Cora goes anywhere. Real talk.
I think Cora has been a lightning rod ever since he's taken the helm of the team, you know, whether that be pre-suspension or post-suspension. You know, his stubbornness comes into play a lot. People like to say, you know, he overmanaged the game into a loss, or, you know, this was a brilliant display of managing, and, you know, he pulled a victory out of nowhere, right? You know, some will say he pulled victories out of defeat. Others will say he pulled, you know, defeat out of the jaws of victory. I think the biggest determining factor of this hot take is the word fires, right? You know, what is that exit going to be like in Boston? Because I think it's a greater than 50% chance that he's not in Boston next year. You know, is it that he is traded? Is it that he, you know, mutually decided to part ways? Or, you know, is it that shameful firing and then, you know, the subsequent Globe article that says Alex Cora XYZ and they badmouth him on his way out of town? I think he has worn out his welcome here. You know, it has been very public that he is looking to kind of elevate his position within an organization, whether that be a general manager, whether that be, you know, a front office role. But I don't necessarily see him being, you know, kind of in the dugout in 2025. Now, does Jason Veritek kind of do that 180? Because we haven't heard him kind of openly say that he has a desire to be the manager. You know, he has been approached about it in years past and said, hey, you know, I'm not ready for that, or, you know, that's not the path that I want to pursue at this moment in time. You know, was he just kind of doing, I guess, you know, the PR car wash to, you know, make sure that he keeps his name clean, knows that the Red Sox weren't necessarily ready for him, wasn't a good team to be a GM of? You know, these are all things that we have to kind of consider when it comes to this scenario with these specific players. But I'd be very surprised if the Red Sox did fire Cora. You know, he is a World Series winning manager. He does have a lot of cachet within the organization, within the fan base. And, you know, this is a front office that doesn't really have a lot of room to work with in terms of belief from the fan base. And I think if they were to fire Alex Cora unceremoniously, that would do a lot to kind of hurt their standing. Terry.
I wouldn't get too hung up on the word fire. I just think he's not going to be here for some reason or another. I mean, there's only so many times he's going to want to go sit at that table and take questions from Pete Abraham, Chris Cotillo, Sean McAdam on why the defense sucked and why he can't do anything about it. I think that's kind of wearing on him. And if, you know, if you lose a pitcher or suddenly Crawford just is getting shelled on a weekly basis and maybe Houck reverts back and Whitlock gets hurt, like only really one of those things needs to happen at this point for things to really go wrong. I could just see him telling ownership, like, listen, I've done all I can. You know, why don't you give Veritek a shot, or, you know, perhaps Vasquez? I just think he knows he wants to test the market. He's getting paid $3 million this year, and Craig Counsell's getting paid $8 million. Yeah, so I don't think the Red Sox really want him back, and I don't think Alex Cora wants to come back.
I mean, the dollars go a long way, right? And the difference between $3 and $8 is sizable. Anything else that you guys would like to mention in terms of Alex Cora or Jason Veritek? Nope. All right, moving on to the next hot take. This comes from Josh T247. He says the Red Sox will have a new closer come September. And I love this one. Personally, I don't think it's that hot of a take. I think this is right up the alley of where we are going to be as an organization. I am all the way over Kenley Jansen's nonsense. I'm all the way out on him. This is a guy that complained about the team before the regular season. This is a guy that has refused to take the ball in safe situations. This is a guy that has underperformed. And even today, he's already complaining about the very baseballs that he is throwing. He's saying that they're not muddied up enough. He can't control them. This is right after he hit a guy in the face. So yes, please, by all means, bring in a new closer, bring in a different person for the back end of this bullpen. On a day in which Kenley Jansen moved up into what I believe top five all-time saves in MLB history, he's complaining about something. This is a person that is constantly disgruntled with organizations, with, you know, usage, with roles, whatever it ends up being. He's always got a beef with somebody. So, you know, there had been talks that potentially we could trade Kenley at the trade deadline. He is depreciating his own value at this point. We're not going to be able to recoup anything good for him because he's a player that, you know, is only going to want to go to a situation that fits his fancy and is only going to want to pitch on days in which he's, you know, kind of in the mood to pitch, for lack of better terms. So I think it's a great take. I don't think it's that hot. Personally, I do think there is going to be a new closer in Boston sooner rather than later. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, when it comes to the closers, I mean, this is kind of in tie with another one of the takes that we have here. Facts are facts. Like, this was a really, really kind of ugly last appearance for Kenley Jansen. You don't want to hear the excuses at any point in time. But, I mean, truthfully, in April, if you're having excuses, that's not a really good sign. And Kenley's been great this year so far. This was his worst appearance of the season by far. And when you hit a batter, you buzz Logan O'Hop, and then you hit him with a pitch. I think hit him on the brim of the hat, the helmet. You allow kind of a bloop hit, just unlucky. And you walk the next guy. You are able to ultimately escape with major damage by striking out Mike Trout to end the game. But, I mean, that could have gotten and gone a lot worse. I don't really like to hear the excuses, but he is older. Like, this isn't someone who's 26, 27 years old pitching for the Dodgers in a lights out situation scenario, you know? So I think it's very possible that the Red Sox end up having a new closer come September, October. And I don't think it's going to be a full-time closer. I think it's going to be them making a transition from Jansen to somebody else, because I don't know if Kenley's going to be with the Boston Red Sox next year. I definitely don't think he will be. So I definitely think this is pretty accurate. Yeah, Cody.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to kind of kick in something before we kick it over to Terry. I was so happy when we signed Kenley to begin with, right? Because it gave definition to our bullpen, right? We were lacking a closer for many years, and I think we kind of saw the ugly effects of not having the roles being defined in a bullpen. And so it is, I think, particularly disheartening to kind of hear this come out from a player that had brought us so much stability to a place of a point of need, right? And it's just an extra layer of bummer, for lack of better terms, that, you know, a player that had done so much for an organization in such a short amount of time has already done a full 180, gone full heel, and is, you know, pretty much being like, hey, get me out of here. Come get me. I don't want to be here anymore. And it's just really sad to see. But I interrupted Terry. Terry, what do you got?
I don't have a ton. I mean, his popularity numbers are like trending down towards like Alfredo Aceves in terms of unpopular Red Sox closers. He was their closer in 2012, and it was kind of a trial thing. Didn't go well, and then he had a heck of an attitude about it, and then I think they released him. But, yeah, and I think you got Liam Hendricks ready to go probably, you know, mid-summer or so, and he's under contract through next season, so I think the Red Sox are going to want to see what they have with him. So it wouldn't shock me if he wins the closer role in the last couple months. And the one thing I will caution, though, with Hendricks is he's 35 years old, hasn't pitched in the last, by then, year and a half due to Tommy John surgery, and then missed a chunk of the season before due to, you know, a battle with cancer, which luckily You know, he crushed. So it's just been a while since Hendricks has put in a full season of work. And how overpowering is he going to be at age 35? So there's some question marks, but maybe, you know, the pitching in August and September will kind of give us a good idea of where he's at and what we may or may not need to do this winter. But I think we can be positive of one thing. It is Kenley Jansen's last year in Boston.
That is undeniable. I think we would all be very surprised if Kenley was wearing a Red Sox uniform next year. I believe we have one more hot take for the evening, and it is Charlie. What do you have for us?
Yeah, so this one's going to come to us from Nicholas Good. This is at Nicholas Good SP4, so Sphinx Papa. The take is, if the Red Sox really had no injuries, and that means Hendricks, Giolito, Story, and Grissom right off the bat, knowing what we know now, playoffs. So let's talk about a couple things here. Let's dig deep and dive here. Lucas Giolito's been not great for a couple years. So Liam Hendricks, also not great. Trevor Story has not been great for a couple years either. Vaughn Grissom, very, very new to the league. In order to say that the Red Sox have to go no injuries, you need the following from those four. You need to see Vaughn Grissom in 2022, when if you were to multiply all those numbers by four, he's got almost a 2080 slash hitting .291 with 20 stolen bases. You need that Vaughn Grissom back. Lucas Giolito, you need the 2019 Lucas Giolito, 4 years ago, five now, 2019, when he went 14-9 with a 3.4 ERA and struck out 228 guys in 176 innings. You need that Lucas Giolito. Liam Hendricks, you need the Liam Hendricks from 3 years ago when he went 8-3, 38 saves, and struck out 113 guys in 71 innings. And last but not least, this is another doozy, you need the Trevor Story from 5 years ago when he had 35 homers, 85 RBIs, hitting in Colorado, hitting .294, and scored over 100 runs. You need those four from those specific years in order to say yes, playoffs. Because injuries are a part of the game. So even if they're doing great this year and they're having those wild seasons, you're taking them in a perfect season where no injuries took place, or standard days off, or Vaughn Grissom just got called up and only played X amount of games. So you need all of that and literally the perfect storm of all the other teams getting injuries and you getting none. I love it. I think it's super optimistic, but it's not realistic because there are going to be injuries to every single team. Every single team has had at least one or two injuries. Some teams are losing pitchers for the entire season. Spencer Strider, gone. Who's the other big one that left this year? Shane McClanahan is done for this year, recovering, but it was Spencer Strider and Bieber. So Bieber's out. And I think they were both out within, what, a day or two of each other? So injuries are going to happen no matter what. If it's not Grissom or Giolito or Hendricks or Story, Devers could get injured. Devers is injured now. You know, what if you lose... My God, what if you lose, you know, two or three other guys on your team in your offense? What if you lose Yoshida? What if you lose Connor Wong? It's going to happen. And I think it's easy to say that this team is playoff bound, assuming everything goes great. And dude, Nicholas, I appreciate the take, but truth be told, dude, real talk, injuries are going to happen no matter what. And it's going to happen to every team. So I would love to sit there and say glass full, not half full, like all the way. But unfortunately, it's just not realistic. And we're unfortunately living it right now. But on the flip side, we're 9-7 right now. And we're making do with what we've got. So thank you for the take. And I will hand it off to Terry.
So Nicholas was very pro-Heim until the very bitter end. So he comes from... a part of the spectrum that's optimistic, I guess. So that's probably where the take comes from. And we appreciate him for submitting it anyway. But I think, Charlie, you stated it perfectly. You have to align a lot of stars to get all of that to work. I don't know. I think the defense is still bad under all of those scenarios. Well, I guess with the exception of Story, but so I disagree with the take. I don't think our pitching is sustainable or would have been with only Giolito. Now, if you're operating under the mindset of, well, if Giolito was healthy, then you go get Montgomery, then I'm like, okay, I can start to get there, but the take the way he laid out, I disagree with it.
I'm going to preface this take with, I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, right? So I've had to live through the Aaron Rodgers era. You know, we had the weird back end of the 2010s, we had a very good 2020, 2021, 2022, where we overperformed, was the number one seed, was expected to win the Super Bowl, and didn't, right? Like, those are crushing losses. I was also a Packer fan, you know, this last year when Jordan Love took us to the divisional round, lost to a 49ers team in which, you know, you could argue we had a great chance of winning. And I think those are the losses that are ending up being more disheartening, because so many things have to go right for you to win a championship. So many things have to go right for you to make the playoffs and to be a successful team. And we're looking at it right now, right? You're talking about four players being healthy that are already out for the season. And you're talking about four players that aren't, you know, it wasn't like they were good last year, right? These are individuals, as Charlie mentioned, that were good multi-years ago that would need to recapture their peak performance for us to be in the playoffs, right? It is so hard to win a championship in sports. It is so hard to have continued performance over the course of 162 games. While I love the optimism, and it's great to see that in the fan base, I like to consider myself an optimist as well. I just don't think it's a realistic expectation that all of these things are going to break right. The players on the team that have been stepping up maybe don't have those opportunities to perform and to contribute. And so, you know, while it is a fun thought experiment, I don't find it to be, you know, realistic, unfortunately. But it does, you know, give good fodder for the future, right? You know, we have the opportunity maybe next year, maybe 2026, when that championship window, quote unquote, opens on the timeline that ownership has kind of, you know, softly laid out for us. These can be contributors. These can be mentors for the young guys that are going to come up and that we're going to be relying upon. But unfortunately, that is not going to be this year. We got to go through, you know, the remaining, 148 games that we got left, and, you know, maybe find our way into the wild card. Anybody else have anything they would like to add on top of that?
I'm just going to say, Nick, if Cody disagrees with you on this take, light it on fire and keep it in the safe space.
Yeah, man, the sun's always shining over here, and I'm trying to find, you know, 162 victories in 162 one-game seasons. But if nobody has anything else they would like to add, we will wrap it there. I hope everybody has a great day. Take care.